Welcome back, Deep Divers. Today we're going to be looking at the Exodus story, but maybe not how you'd expect.
Oh.
Yeah, we're diving into the book of Ezekiel, specifically chapter 20. And to guide us, we've got Dr. Leslie Allen's lecture.
Right.
And he really flips the script on this whole Exodus thing. You know, usually we think about it as like, you know, God's big rescue mission, right? All about grace and deliverance.
Yeah.
But Ezekiel, he's coming at it from a totally different angle.
Yeah, you got to remember he's writing during the Babylonian exile. So things are, shall we say, a little less celebratory.
For sure. So set the scene for us. What's the context for Ezekiel's unique perspective?
Okay, so picture this. It's 591 BC, 6 years into the exile, and you've got these Judean elders approaching Ezekiel. Now, they're probably looking for, well, a bit of good news.
Yeah.
You know, when are we going back home? Is God going to, you know, come through for us again? That sort of thing.
Makes sense. Hope springs eternal and all that.
Right. But what they get from Ezekiel is, well, it's not exactly a pep talk.
Oh.
Instead of focusing on the, you know, the miracles and the happy ending, Ezekiel's like, hold on, let's rewind a bit. He starts pointing out all the times the Israelites, well, kind of blew it.
Even during the Exodus itself.
Oh, yeah. He's basically saying, don't think for a second that just because you were chosen, you get a free pass. He's deconstructing this idea that the Exodus automatically guarantees them anything, especially not the land.
Okay, so he's challenging their sense of entitlement, like, actions have consequences, folks.
Exactly. And he backs it up with some, well, some pretty surprising stuff.
Like what?
Well, for instance, you know how we usually think of the Exodus as a testament to Israel's faith? Well, Ezekiel throws in this curveball from Joshua 24.14. It mentions that the Israelites were already worshiping other gods back in Egypt.
Whoa, wait, so they weren't exactly these, like, pure-hearted believers fleeing oppression?
Apparently not, and that's not all. Ezekiel takes it even further, reinterpreting a line from Exodus 32.34. God says, on the day I will punish them for their sin. Now, in Exodus, it's about a specific event, but Ezekiel's suggesting God already had exile in mind as a consequence, even way back during their desert wanderings.
So he's saying the seeds of their exile were sown way earlier. Like, even with God performing miracles, their actions still mattered.
Precisely. And then he goes and drops this bombshell in Ezekiel 20.25. He says, God gave Israel laws that were not good.
Hold up. God gave bad laws. I mean, that doesn't sound light.
It's a tough one, I know, but it's not that God intentionally gave bad laws. It's more like God gave them free will, right? And the freedom to, well, to mess things up.
So even with good laws, humans can still find ways to distort them.
Exactly. And Ezekiel uses this really stark example to illustrate this. He talks about child sacrifice.
Okay, that took a dark turn.
Right. But the point is, nowhere in the Torah does God command child sacrifice.
Right.
But Ezekiel points out how they might have twisted the meaning of a Hebrew verb to set apart. It can refer to the redemption of the firstborn, but also, horrifyingly, to child sacrifice.
Oh, wow. So they were using religious language to justify something, well, something truly awful.
And that's a powerful reminder, I think, that even with divine guidance, it's ultimately human choices that determine the outcome.
Yeah, and it makes you think about all the ways, even today, that good intentions can get twisted. So Ezekiel's definitely not shying away from the hard stuff. But does he offer any hope? Like, is there a light at the end of this tunnel?
That's where the second part of Ezekiel 20 gets really interesting. He does offer hope, a vision of a second Exodus, but there's a catch.
So there's a second Exodus, but with a catch. What's the catch?
Well, it's not going to be an easy ride back to the promised land. Ezekiel make it very clear that this second Exodus, it'll involve purification, judgment, you know, a whole new wilderness experience.
So it's not just about, like, physically going back to the land. It's more like a spiritual reset.
Exactly. This time, it's about getting rid of all that idolatry and rebellion that led them astray in the first place. It's about, you know, getting right with God.
Okay, it makes sense. But changing habits is tough. Like, how many times have we tried to, I don't know, give up chocolate or something and failed miserably? How does Ezekiel address that, you know, the challenge of actually turning away from all that bad stuff?
He talks about memory, yeah. In Ezekiel 20.43, he says, you shall remember your ways and all your deeds by which you have polluted yourselves, and you shall loathe yourselves for all the evils that you have committed. Wow. It's heavy stuff.
So it's not just about forgetting the past and moving on. It's about actually remembering and confronting it.
Right. And feeling that deep remorse. Because that's what motivates real change. Not guilt, not shame, but a genuine understanding of the harm that was caused.
So it's like, okay, I messed up, but I'm not going to let that define me. I'm going to learn from it and move forward.
Exactly. It's about taking ownership, recognizing that a change of heart is needed, a real change, not just, you know, surface level stuff.
And that's a message that still resonates, right? Like, how often do we try to avoid confronting the darker parts of ourselves or even, you know, our society? But maybe that's the key to real growth.
I think Ezekiel would agree. He's pushing us to look deeper, to re-examine not just our understanding of this one biblical event, but our whole relationship with the divine.
And the divine's reputation, right? I mean, that's another thread that keeps popping up in this chapter. It's like God's concerned about how this whole Israel situation is making him look.
It's fascinating, isn't it? There's this tension between his justice and his desire to be seen as a powerful and holy God.
So it's kind of like a cosmic PR problem. Like, I want to be known for my mercy, but these guys are making it hard.
Right. And it highlights how interconnected everything is. The fate of Israel, it's not just about them. It has implications for how God is perceived by everyone, by all nations.
So how does Ezekiel resolve that tension? Like, how does he square wanting to punish Israel, but also, you know, maintain a good image?
Well, he envisions this future where the Israelites return to the land. But this time, they actually live in a way that honors God, truly honors him. Their worship is pure. There's no more of that pagan influence. And that showcases God's power and holiness to the whole world.
So it's like a redemption story. Not just for Israel, but for God's reputation, too.
Exactly. And it ties back to that idea of Israel being a light to the nations, a beacon, you know, showing everyone what it means to be in right relationship with God.
But how do we apply that today? Like, what are our Exodus moments? What are those things we need to leave behind to really embody that light?
That's a great question. What are the things that are holding us back individually and collectively? What are the idols of our time? And how do we let go of them and move towards a more just and compassionate world?
Those are some heavy questions to ponder.
They are, but they're important. And I think Ezekiel, even though he was writing thousands of years ago, he offers us some valuable insights into how we might begin to answer them.
Yeah, it's really amazing how Ezekiel manages to kind of weave all these threads together. You know, divine reputation, human responsibility, even the power of memory. And then this longing for a second Exodus, it's like this story. It's not just history, right? It's like this living thing.
Yeah, it really is. And it's interesting to think about those Judean elders, right? The ones who came to Ezekiel in the first place, they were looking for comfort and a promise of return. But
yeah, like, hey, when can we go home?
Exactly. And instead, they get this deep dive into their own, well, their own mess ups.
Yeah, not exactly what they signed up for.
Right, but maybe that's the point, right? Sometimes those hard truths, the ones that make us squirm a little,
yeah,
those are the ones that really change us. You know, Ezekiel, he didn't offer them false hope. He pushed them to look at themselves to really understand what repentance meant.
Yeah, it's like you're saying, look, freedom's not about going back to the way things were. It's about becoming something new, something better.
I like that. And that idea of transformation, of really becoming who we're meant to be, that's something that really speaks to me.
Me too. I mean, we all have those moments, right, where we're clinging to something that's not good for us, whether it's an idea or a relationship or even just a way of thinking. And maybe those are our own little Exodus moments, the times when we have to let go of the familiar and step into the unknown.
Yeah, absolutely. And like those Israelites, we're going to face challenges. We're going to stumble. But that promise of becoming more ourselves, it's worth it, isn't it?
It is. So I guess as we wrap up this deep dive into Ezekiel's take on the Exodus, I'm just left with this sense of awe and a whole lot of questions. It's like this story, it keeps unfolding, you know?
It does. It keeps speaking to us. And maybe that's the most important thing we can take away from this whole conversation, the Exodus story. It's not just about what happened back then. It's about what it means for us right now. It's about how it can inspire us to face our own wilderness experiences and to embark on our own journeys of transformation.
So, deep divers, we leave you with this. What are the Exodus moments in your own life? What are the things you need to leave behind, the patterns you need to break to really move forward? Keep questioning, keep exploring, and keep diving deep. We'll see you next time.